Welcome into another episode of Podcast 63. The King of Rogers Park's reign will continue. That's right. Our man at the helm, Porter Moser, decided that he's going to stay here in Chicago, Illinois, to coach our Loyola Ramblers. But that's not all we have this episode. Buck and Lou, we're going to be talking about Porter. We're going to be talking about someone who left the program, someone that Porter will be replacing, and someone who joined the squad. We have another recruit. After last week's episode, we had someone else join the squad. So don't miss this episode. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to another episode of Podcast 63.
He jumps. He passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Brown gets the score. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Loyola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
Welcome into another episode of Podcast 63, another special edition Skype episode. We got Buck and Lou here, and Lou's in another secret location. Lou, where are you reporting from this time?
I'm reporting from the good old rafters of Gentile Arena right now.
How do you get up there, Lou? I want to know because I need a new vantage point for the games, and I just really need to know. How do you get up there?
Just got a dedication, hard work, and a culture really get you to know where to find the great seats in Gentile.
Well, that's a pretty good segue because we're going to be talking a lot about culture in this week's episode. One of our culture creators, cultivators, and I don't know, overall maintainers of the culture, Porter Moser decides to stay with Loyola in Chicago and continue his reign as the King of Rogers Park. I don't know about you. I do know because we've been talking all week. But, man, I was so nervous. I was on the verge of tears. I was in agony. I was stressed.
About what? What were you stressed about?
That Porter was going to leave. That he was going to leave Chicago, go to some podunk little city called New York. I've never heard of it. And take a new job at a different school where the administration was not agreeing with each other. There's half a roster, but there's lots of money. There's Madison Square Gardens, and it's the Big East. So I was nervous. How were you nervous about it at any point? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, so I think this is just the way things go when a coach leads a team to a Final Four run. You start getting national attention. The man became an analyst. And again, I 100% agree. I think if we had like a lever, I think I would have slightly leaned toward St. John's, but easily could have gained back to 50-50. For those who don't know, St. John's University in the Big East in New York, they're the ones who offered Porter an 8-year, $17 million contract. So roughly just 2-point-something per year. That's a lot to offer to a guy who definitely doesn't make that, I would say, at Loyola. But again, there's the two sides. You and I were talking all week, and we both discussed to each other that they had 6 scholarships that need to be filled, and no one really was coming in. So again, there was multiple things, and we'll go into this now, but just setting up, like, I could see both sides, but I personally was leaning toward the fact that he might leave just because when opportunity calls, you don't know what might happen in life. And with the money there and the opportunity, I thought that was just the best time for him to go.
Yeah, I'm going to take our listeners kind of from the day-to-day or hour-to-hour news, just as how I remember it. On Monday, on the internet, on Twitter, there were reports saying that Porter was in New York visiting with the administration, the AD, the athletic director, as well as, I think, like the vice president at the university. It was kind of out of left field. Like, there was some rumbling about them looking at a mid-major coach. But it was kind of the first time we had heard Porter's name attached to St. John's, or at least I had. This was probably about mid-afternoon. And then near dinner time, they were reporting that they had taken Porter out to dinner. And I'm sure they were wining and dining him and treating him some nice steakhouse somewhere in New York. And then towards the end of the night, the next report was that they had offered him the job. There was no numbers out yet, but the report was that he was offering him St. John's was offering him the position. And at that point, it seemed like everyone on Twitter had kind of decided that Porter was going to take the job. There was at least many of the outlets I was reading said, you know, oh, he should take the job. What would he, why would he stay? You know, he's in the Big East, yada, yada, yada. And then there were reports that Porter had been interviewing vice or assistant coaches that had New York City ties. And at that point, I think that was like the lowest point where I thought for sure he was going to go. I mean, you know, you don't start asking or trying to interview assistant coaches if you're not seriously thinking about it. But that was the last bit of news for that night. Woke up Tuesday morning to the fact that Porter was flying back to Chicago. And I read something that his family had said that they didn't really want to go to New York, or that there were like discussions to be had with his own family because they weren't on board. And at that point, there's a little glimmer of hope, a little bit of, you know, okay, maybe, you know, he's coming back to Chicago. At least he'll have a discussion with, you know, his family, with Loyola people. And then it was kind of silence for like, a good portion of that day, kind of nothing, no news, you know, either way. You know, Loyola said for a while, there's nothing to report. And then come like 4 o'clock on Tuesday, the news came out that Porter was not accepting St. John's offer. And I think this is where I would like you to chime in. The most surprising news to me was his contract wasn't reworked, which I know he just signed a new contract last year, but we kind of figured out that his contract is probably around $1 million because we're not at a public university. Those numbers aren't public. But, you know, his pay upgrade was at least double. So I'm kind of want to get your perspective. Why do you think they didn't try to rework his contract this year for Porter?
Yeah, no. I would say the whole fact that the contract was just only a new contract is only a year old. I think that is definitely, I would say, something. That's kind of tough, especially at a school like Loyola, just to be redoing contracts every year, because then it leaves the school with no benefit of just keeping to a consistent basis of just saying, hey, our contract is meant to be, we look over it over time. It just, because sometimes in some instances you might get a coach who's just a one and done, and it leaves the school kind of liable. So I think that's why. But also, like, in all honesty, I believe there were quotes and stuff you put out that everyone was in communication. Porter was able to communicate with the athletics department that he was, hey, I got talked from St. John's. I'm going to go reach out to them. And he was transparent. And that's the thing that you want. And I think if Porter was able to be transparent with the contract, with an offer negotiation, then I believe he'll be transparent with the athletic department about their end of the contract. And again, it's only a year old, the new contract. So I definitely see. If we're talking money, for an example, again, as like you said, we're not state schools. So we can't really get the facts and figures. But after UNI's amazing run a few years ago, their head coach got a 10-year extension with an average of $900,000 per year. So that's something that's big. I forget the exact number of years for Porter's contract, unless you know by chance. But
I think off the top of my head, I think it goes through either the 24-25 season or 25-26.
Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like it was a 6 or 7 year extension, but. Yeah. Money-wise, we won't know. But again, no matter what that you say, there's no way Loyola, I think in my opinion, it's at least $1 million more or just $1.1 million more than what Loyola could easily have offered with what St. John's was offering. So, and again, we can even segue, if you don't mind. I'm going to start off with like the conference. Big East is a bigger conference, no pun intended, but the Big East has teams like Georgetown. And again, the Big East has been a conference that has just competed at high levels. As we know, for listeners of the NBC, Creighton left the NBC to go to the Big East because we then filled in Creighton's role. So the Big East is about teams who are emerging and becoming bigger and want that hard competition. For the Midwest, Marquette's in the Big East. DePaul's in the Big East, right down the block from us, DePaul. So again,
are they really in the Big East if they just come in last every year? Does that still count?
In my opinion, I don't think we could talk about DePaul later, maybe about a scheduling thing later on. But you got teams like Butler after their run, they moved in Providence. So like there's Creighton, the team we played in, like I said, in the NIT there in the Big East. So big names are in the Big East. And again, that's what you kind of want to play against is the level where everyone knows the team to play against. Villanova, champions. So it's a big deal sometimes when it comes to conference play, because then you get the benefits of the conference. The conference offers maybe a little bit more money, offers a little bit more recognition, and then the team. So unless you can then add on what you think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I just think undoubtedly, like, in this job was a better job for Porter, minus all the bad circumstances of St. John's. Like,
exactly, if
you're like, oh, Porter got an offer from a random Big East team, like, yeah, better job. But going along with, you know, he's trying to fill in the job of Chris Mullen, who stepped down / was let go at St. John's. The reports were that he stepped down, but, you know, there's some drama there. Who is a legend at St. John's, you know, trying to fill those shoes of a guy who's a living legend has got to be difficult. The past two coaches at St. John's had, I think Mullen was there for 4 years, and the guy before him was only there for 4 or 5 years as well. And as we know, you know, Porter didn't really turn the program around until year 4 or 5 when we won the CBI. And, you know, even you could argue that really wasn't much of a turnaround. So, like, going along with the head coaching difficulties, their administration, the vice president, there were reports that the vice president of the university and the athletic director had different names in mind for who they wanted to be the head coach. I believe the vice president wanted Porter, but initially the athletic director didn't want Porter. So there was disconnect, on the higher levels. So they're really I want Porter to succeed. Like, I want him to do well. I know eventually, I don't think he's going to stay at Loyola forever. Like, I get that reality. But I just, the whole time I was shaking my head because I just didn't think this was the best situation for Porter. You know, I think that if he has one more good run with Loyola, like if he takes if we win the conference and go to March Madness and win a game or two, he's going to have a bunch of offers from similar to better level universities. So I just was hoping that paired with the fact that he does love Chicago, I don't think there's any question about the fact that he loves Chicago, was enough to keep him. And it turned out that it really was just barely enough. My favorite, I think, report from the whole decision was that he had written two different letters. He had written a letter of thank you for these past 8 years, Loyola and Chicago. It's been great, but I have to move on. And he also wrote a letter, which was the one that we ended up all reading, was the I'm back. I'm all in. Like, you know, I got this offer, but I'm committed to Loyola. And it was that, if nothing else, proves that he truly was 50-50 between St. John's and Loyola. And it just so happened that the letter he wrote about Loyola, staying at Loyola, made him feel happier and better. But there is a little piece of me that has this, like, I don't know how to say it. Like, I want to gloat a little bit that Porter decided to stay over going to a Big East team, because it's a big deal. You don't hear that. I can't remember the last story where, you know, a mid-major coach got this huge offer and didn't go. So overall, just I thought he was gone and super happy and relieved that he's staying. But I'm trying to think what else. Do you have any other thoughts about, like, the whole story?
Yeah, I think reality, people got to understand. I think one thing, the reason why I wouldn't have taken the job if we're looking at the end result, just their situation, especially with an athletics program and then administration not really seeing eye to eye on things. And then as well as Porter would have had to fill, I believe it was about 6 scholarships that St. John's has still. So, again, as most people, especially us fans, we give a new coach maybe 1 or 2 years, depending on the team, whatever team is left. But, again, St. John's is a team that went to the NCAA tournament this past year. And we, as Loyola Ramblers, we didn't get to go to the NCAA tournament. So the fact that they were there and they even wanted more from their coach. So St. John's right now, they have 5 scholarship offers that they need to fill. And at this time, I think that was best for Porter not to, because that's five guys you need to come into guys who wouldn't even be sure if he was they were to stay or not for Porter. And then the other end, this, in my opinion, having Porter stay helps the team a lot. We don't have to worry about maybe losing guys or even considering the idea of losing guys to a new coach. We just have the same group and now the core group of guys who were freshmen when they went to the Final Four in Cameron Krobig and Lucas Williamson. And now they'll be juniors. They will be upperclassmen and they will be the leaders of the team. Yes, we'll have, I believe Bruno's our only senior really out there. It's going to be a heavy junior core. Tate Hall here, it's just going to be that. So having a coach come back and dedicate his time to these guys who have now become older members of the team, I think it's going to be a great boost.
Yeah, just to kind of at least wrap up the like head coaching St. John's story, we can talk more about like the about Porter and the team as a whole. But Mike Anderson, who was used to be the head coach at Arkansas, was given and did accept the position at St. John's, head coaching position at St. John's. So after everything, they did end up getting a guy who has experience coaching, you know, in the Power Six conferences. So, I mean, good for them. I'm glad they figured it out because I know that, you know, this was I think the last high major college basketball team that didn't have a head coach. So they definitely wanted to get that under wraps. But as for how it affects Loyola, there was that feeling of anyone could leave, like you mentioned. If Porter were to have taken a job somewhere else, that does open up the door to let anyone leave for the most part. Because then at that point, guys can transfer and claim that, you know, to try to not have to sit out a year. So guys like Cameron Krutwig or Lucas Williamson or Cooper Kiefis could have transferred out of Loyola and not had to have sat a year. In addition to that, the new guys coming in, the new commits, could have decommitted from Loyola. And it just really, like, without, you know, it would have been a crap show, like, for a lack of a better term. It would have been super uncomfortable. Anyone could have done anything. There would be no guide to figure out the situation. We didn't really have any coach lined up to take over the head coaching position because Brian Mullins had left to go to SIU. So overall, we really dodged a bullet, I think, as a basketball team. I think eventually the program would have built itself back up and it would have taken a few years, but just because of the run that we did have the past year. But for the next two or three years, it would have been pretty rough unless guys would have opted to stay. Definitely happy that Porter stayed and able to keep the team together, which is, in my opinion, the biggest product of the whole decision. But I don't know. Did you have any additional thoughts on how Porter leaving would have affected the team or anything else to go along?
No, I think you hit it right there. It's tough, but that's reality when you might have lose your head coach. But luckily, we definitely lucked out on this one and ended up on the better end. So Porter Moser staying with the Loyola Ramblers.
Yeah, and I don't think either of us are in, like, I like Porter a lot. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think he's a great recruiter, and I think that he prepares the guys super well before games. But neither one of us are the type of guys that thinks that Porter can do no wrong. So I think for us, the biggest scare of this all was not necessarily, like, Porter actually leaving, but, like, what would have happened because of Porter leaving. We've criticized Porter on the show before, and we will probably do it again. But for now, incredibly happy to have him still in Chicago and what that means for the team overall. Speaking of the team, it got bigger. The squad increased again by one since the last time we had a podcast this past week. So for anyone who is not aware, we filled our last scholarship for now our last scholarship was given to a 6'4 guard from Texas, Jalon Pipkins. Pipkins played this past year at a junior college. His first year, his freshman year, I believe he played for CSUN, which is a Division I team. And then because he went to JUCO, he didn't have to sit out. And then now because he's going from junior college to Division I, he also doesn't have to sit out. But he had some really impressive numbers at Paris College. He's from that. He went to Paris High School as well. So it was somewhere where he could be close to home. If I remember right, he averaged over 20 points a game, as well as 4.5 rebounds and 4.5 assists. He is a very athletic guard. Like I said before, he's 6'4". The Loyola Twitter page tweeted out some highlights from different highlights from Jalon Pipkins, as well as our other recruit, Keith Clemens. But what I'm expecting of Jalon Pipkins is extreme athleticism and explosiveness. I mean, this guy can jump out of the gym, like, very realistically. He some highlights. I think there's two or three dunks in just, like, a short highlight video. He's not afraid to go to the hoop. He's not afraid to try to slam it home. He had, I think the last highlight in his highlight clip is the most impressive. It's just him diving and dunking over a smaller guy. But he can pull up from three. I think his 3-point percentage, it wasn't anything crazy, but it was, I think it was like 36% or 37% from three this past year. I'd imagine he'll have his hot streaks and his cold streaks. Just from what I can see, and the one thing I am nervous about is turnovers. I don't remember specifically what the number was, but it was pretty high. I would imagine that's a combination of him quite obviously being the best scorer on his team, so the ball's always in his hands. And also, just, I mean, I think he might be, I don't know, a little careless with the ball at times, but that's something we can analyze when he's actually played some games for us. So yeah, I'm excited for this guy. As you can tell, I've been, you know, talking about it for a long time now. So Lou, what were you thinking? What are your initial thoughts about our new recruit, Jalon Pipkins?
Yeah, no, it finished it off, so that's great. We're now confidently have 13 scholarship players on the next year's team, and it's a good thing to see. As I seen when we look at his stats, he's the guy leading on his team. I think right away, for people who don't know, he's ranked in the top 100 in the JUCO recruiting rankings. So to have a guy on that list in past years, I think JUCO players, as people who may not know, Andre Jackson, the great Andre Jackson, was a JUCO recruit. And the amount of things he did in his time were amazing, from sixth man of the year to Final Four players. So I think having players like Pipkins and then Clemens, like, it's just going to show a great addition from his stats on the JUCO. Averaging 21 points a game is great. Again, as we don't know, and we can't really say where he's going to fit into this team, we don't know, because at his position, guard, we've lost two great big ball handlers and high-tempo guys in Clayton Custer and Marcus Towns. So we need guys to step up, as well as guys to be depth. I think that's where a pickup like Pipkins and Clemens, they're going to help with both. They can help with both. And again, as we have guys like Bruno and other guys, and Marquise Kennedy coming in and Paxson. So we're going to need a kind of an understanding of where people fit in. And I think having Pipkins with such able to score, I think that's a great thing to have on either side of whether he's going to end up being a starter or if he could be off the bench. And again, his first year with the team, I've seen a JUCO before and Andre Jackson. First year with the team, he got sixth man of the year. So I think it's great that we picked him up, and I think it's great that we finished and closed the recruiting class for 2019.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there with the comment about depth. I think this team, there are some things that this team is going to be much better at than the team last year, at least on paper. At this point, depth is one of them. Depth is for sure the biggest one. There are quality guys. There are more quality guys. At times last year, It seemed like Porter was only comfortable playing seven guys at one point, which, you know, we can talk for a long time about why that probably wasn't fair and more guys should have more playing time, yada, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, it was a seven-man rotation for a little while. I very much don't see that happening. If that happens again this year, unless there's a bunch of injuries, something's very wrong, and we will be sure to talk about it. But at this point, we have our two junior college players, which they will be getting minutes and in some regard if they show that they are the type of players that we've seen like they are in junior college. We have, you know, Lucas Williamson and Cameron Cartwig, who for sure will be getting big time minutes. And then after that, you got to figure Kaifas and Ugwak will be getting consistent minutes for sure. And then Tate Hall should probably get a decent amount of minutes. And then, you know, we have our three freshmen who those will be yet to be seen how big their roles are. And we have Big Frank and Christian Negron, who figure I would guess that at least one of those guys should get consistent minutes too. So that's, you know, 10 names. I didn't even talk about Bruno Skoknap. So like this team is going to be so much, it's going to have so much more depth. In addition to depth, they're going to be a lot more athletic, a lot taller, a lot lengthier than last year's team. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Clayton Custer was undersized for sure as a point guard in Division I basketball. And then, you know, Marcus Towns, he was 6'4", but he's not going to blow you away with ridiculous dunks or blocks or anything. Very solid player, but immediately, you know, in this lineup, you already have guys that are going to be taller than both of those guys. So I do think this team is going to be deeper, going to be more athletic, going to be lengthier. And I think the big one that is yet to be seen is if this team is going to shoot the ball better than last year's team. I think if they do, then they'll be ready for big time success. And of course the big thing that they lose is that senior leadership, and we'll have to see how that affects the team, because that's kind of a big question mark too. But I love these two signings. One of my favorite stories from the whole Porter thing, was when they asked him why he stayed. I think it was Teddy Greenstein story. He asked him why he stayed. And one of the reasons why he cited that he stayed was because on Sunday he had both Jaylon Pipkins and Keith Clemens in for official visits, and they both committed on Sunday, and he got big hugs from both of their moms. And it's sweet. Like it's a nice thing to hear that, you know, Porter is such a guy who's, you know, emotionally invested in the program, emotionally invested in the guys that come to work with, and that kind of stuff. I think it goes unnoticed by the players. So I'm excited for these two new guys, and excited to see how they play together. What are some of your other thoughts as far as the two junior college guys go?
No, I think you really hit it there, where it's just having everyone, having pretty much even 10 guys that we can think of, and then adding these guys to the mix. It's going to be great. I think it's just from watching highlight tapes, Pipkins has got the shot. He seems to be confident in it. And then the driving, the move to the hoop is great. Clemens the same, nearly. Clemens likes to go for contested. He's got moves to the rim. So I think that's what I would say when looking at the tape. I think both nearly would compare to Marcus's play, of the idea of shooting is there, but also they're going toward the basket. They're right there. And I think Clemens is more of the shooter, leans toward that a little bit more, I'd say. And Pipkins, a little bit with the bounce, he'll go up. But I think they're very similar, and I think, though, that's great, because I think they can add great things to the team.
Yeah, I think one way they complement each other pretty well, it seems like Clemens is at least from his numbers and some of the tape I've watched of him, he seems more careful with the ball. Like, he seems like a better ball handler. He has fewer turnovers per game. So from what I'm going to guess, is that Keith Clemens will be kind of the point guard ball handler type guy, with Pipkins also getting opportunities to be the ball handler. But from what I can tell, it seems like Keith Clemens will be the primary ball handler at this point. And then it all kind of just depends on Marquise Kennedy's play and his growth, and if he's ready to play right away too. Because I still think that Marquise Kennedy can give these guys a run for their money. But it's just going to it's going to be very telling to see how Marquise Kennedy adjusts to college basketball versus high school basketball. Where guys are going to be taller, bigger, stronger. So, but I still think Marquise Kennedy shouldn't be forgotten, because I think he can give these guys a run for their money. So, yeah, I don't know. Any, do you have any last thoughts on commits, junior college kids, the roster, or anything else?
No, I think, it's going to be an interesting, again, as people, need listeners should know, it's like, it's April, so we won't know what the team really looks like until November. We're going to talk about the team no matter what every week, but we won't know. We're not sitting there at practices watching things, so what we hear off the grapevine or on Twitter and stuff is what we're going to get. But again, as I think it's anyone's game. From the tape I've seen, I do 100% agree. I think Marquise Kennedy is there. We kind of are assuming here, but I think we can all agree as fans that Cameron Krutwig will definitely be a center point and a centerpiece to the team. Lucas Williamson, a healthy Lucas Williamson. So, but I think there's multiple things that can come into this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I don't know why we don't get access to practices. I mean, at this point, like,
I think you don't get access to practice. Thank you.
You understand why I don't get access?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably fair enough. I'd probably either be screaming or crying or, you know,
both.
Taking too much video or, yeah, probably both at the same time. But I feel like I think now all the guys on the team listen to the podcast. So I've gotten Twitter messages from every single one just saying, wow, this podcast is so great. I'm just kidding. I don't have any messages from the guys on the team, if anyone was curious. But our last piece introduced. Oh, what, were you going to say something?
No.
Okay, good. Our last piece of news is that one of our, or I guess our only, director of basketball operations, Javon Mammon, has been selected to be Brian Mullen's staff at Southern Illinois, where he will be one of Mullen's next assistant coaches there at SIU. Lou, I know you're more familiar with like the how the operations of the team goes. So can you tell the listeners a little bit of like what the director of basketball operations does at a university?
Yeah, no, from research, I looked it up and stuff, and just really understanding of it fills in the role of helping the operations of the team from travel to scheduling, I believe. So they're their pinpoint person of the team to help with that. But I definitely, I think from a video we watched about Southern Illinois' new coaches and assistant, he has ties to Chicago coaching. I think he was a coach himself. So, again, as people may know and listeners, we're never too upset when it's a Brian Mullins, benefit. It is kind of hurts that it takes away from us, but I think we can fill a role into, Mammon's position, that he left. But, again, it's congrats to Brian Mullins for doing things. And just hopefully when we see both of him and Mammon, we say good smiles and good luck, but, hopefully we come out still with a W.
Yeah, and at this point, it's pretty difficult to, like, speculate, especially that position. You know, we don't have any names for this position. So, you know, if we do hear anything, if we do find anything, we'll be sure to share it on future podcasts. But at this point, we do have the two openings. We still have the other assistant coaching position available as well. So I would imagine that now with the full roster, with Porter being back, and with, you know, the summer coming up, I'd imagine that those roles are pretty, I also wouldn't be surprised if when he came back to talk to our athletic director about the whole contract situation, if he didn't say, hey, you know, I want to hire some higher tier, you know, a higher tier assistant coach that may cost us more money. I could see that as being sort of a bargaining chip with our athletic director. Who knows if that was actually a part of the conversation. But we also know he was talking to different assistant coaches in New York City. So maybe that's something he wants to look into. But at this point, no more name. We don't have any more names to add in, like either the assistant coach or director of basketball operations discussion. I'm glad that Mammon is having an opportunity to be an assistant coach. And like Lou said, anytime it's with Southern Illinois, it's a little bittersweet, but try to focus on the sweet part. And then, as soon as the actual basketball games roll around, we just make sure to beat them a little by more points. But, I think that's all I got. Do you have anything to add? Anything at all? Any Loyola stuff? Any shout outs? Anything new?
No, just for the fans listening, hit up that email, hit up that DM with any question you might have. After the last two podcasts, we've started off with fan questions, so we'd love to hear more. But thanks for listening, everybody.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a great point. Make sure to check out our email. It's in the bio of our Twitter. Send us any questions you want. We will be sure to answer them in future podcasts. But I think that's going to do it from us here. Another episode of Podcast 63. With Buck and Lou. Thank you all for listening, and go Blurs.